Good evening. This is Noreen Sumter on Beyond Potential. Live life your way. And today is Tuesday, and Tuesday is my, it's my favorite time of the week. Why? Because I get to be with you. And so I've had, like tonight, I had a really good night. I went to a brand new co-working space that is, hi, that's you. I went to a brand new co-working space that's just opened up down on Broadway, 1204 Broadway, and it's called Luminary. And it was like, they had a talk there and it was called Real Talk. They have a new series called Real Talk. And it was real talk. Wow. It was three, and it was in lieu of or honor of African American Black History Month.
Right.
And we had two speakers. It was supposed to be three, but one of them got the flu because you know that thing is going around and
killing people. And the changing weather doesn't help.
Hi, Catherine. And so one of the speakers there, her name was Susan Chapman. She is with American Express, and she's just really, really awesome.
Great.
And while I was there, like I was just, you know, picking up words because it's really nice when you actually go to an event and you hear somebody speak, and it's almost like they're speaking your life. You know, you know, repeating the thing.
All the talking points are things that you can relate to.
And all what I realize is like there's nothing new under the sun, right? Mm. There are no new ways to speak. There are no new ways. There are so many teachers, and we're all teaching the same thing. There's an awakening, I think, in the world. Mm-hmm. And so it was just amazing. She talked about her life at American Express. She talked about a mentor. She talked about, you know, using fertility drugs to have her babies.
Right,
and all this. And, you know, she talked about dating, the kinds of men that she was dating. She was dating these alpha males. And what she would do is she would, like, kill them off. You know what I mean? It wouldn't work out. And, you know, the alpha male wants to win. And he would... And then if they don't win, they go away with their, you know, tails between their legs and all this kind of stuff. But finally, she used, which is true, if your things are not working, you have to use, you know, well, you don't have to, but you can get help. She had got herself a coach, mm-hmm. and he helped her find a husband.
Wow.
And it was really great. It was just awesome. So that was, you know, that was tonight. And it was just really nice. And she talked about being resilient, and she talked about being consistent. And I really love that. So in any case, without further ado, I would like to introduce my guest for tonight. And my guest for tonight is, I wanted to say doctor. Sorry, that doctor just popped into my head. Right. Do you ever want to be a doctor?
No.
Right.
A lawyer, yes, but not a doctor.
So we have Van Dirk Fisher, who is the owner and founder.
Founder and artistic director.
Artistic director of the Rion. What's the difference between founder and owner?
Well, as a nonprofit, you can't really own it.
Oh, okay. Of the Rion Theater.
Right.
And he's, I would say that one of your big events is the Strawberry, the One Act Strawberry Film Festival.
Well, the Strawberry One Act Festival.
One Act Festival. Look me, I'm getting it all mixed up.
I got you all flustered, right?
It's got me all at Twitter.
Right.
So welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming.
Yes. I mean, we are so, so excited about the festival this year. Mm-hmm. With everything that's been happening in the, you know, United States right now with immigration, mm-hmm. I went to event for immigration.
Well, before you even go there, okay. I need you to introduce yourself to my people.
Okay.
Because my people need to know who is sitting in the chair tonight.
Okay.
And why is he sitting in the chair?
Why am I here?
So they want to know, who are you? What are you about? Where were you born? Are
all
you originally
that good
from New
stuff.
York? All the really important stuff.
Okay. Well, I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York.
Whereabouts?
Crown Heights.
Oh, you're from, are you Caribbean?
No.
I have to ask that question.
No, but a lot of people say I look Caribbean.
Well, what does the Caribbean look like?
You know, I don't know. I guess like this.
Right, exactly.
No, my parents are from the South, North Carolina.
North Carolina.
Yeah, so they migrated to the North.
And when did they come here?
I think maybe like 1945, somewhere around then. You know, they met at a dance and fell in love and got married, that whole thing.
And do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have...
you do have a sister.
Yeah, I have three sisters
I met one
and
of
two
them.
Brothers.
Oh, wow.
Right, you did meet. So yeah, you met one of them.
You have a total of five.
Total of six, because that includes me.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're not included.
I have two brothers and three sisters.
Okay, so there's six of you.
Right, total of six.
Yeah, if I include myself, there's seven of us.
Right.
But if I include my father's children and my mother's children, two and two, then there's a whole gaggle of us.
Oh, okay.
There's a whole heap of us.
Okay.
Yeah. So did you, where did you go to school?
I went to, for acting, I went to the... School of Performing Arts, mm-hmm. Which
is that
was a high school.
City?
Yeah, that's the one in the city. At the time when I went there, it was on 46th Street. Now mm-hmm. it's the LaGuardia School of the Arts, where the two schools combined,
right.
Which is right there in Lincoln Center. So I went there, and then from there I went to SUNY at Purchase. And
so how many
studies.
People were in your school? Because that's a big school, right?
It was a very small school.
Oh.
So, I think our graduating class, I can't even remember how many, but it was, so it was very select. You auditioned to get into it, so it wasn't a very large, I'm talking about the high school performing arts.
Right.
It was very, very small. But that was a lot of fun, and that really set a lot of things into motion for me
uh-huh.
in terms of what I wanted to do. I interned with Annette Carroll with the Urban Arts Corps back there, NEC.
Did you always know that you wanted to be an actor?
Always, yeah. And I always knew that I wanted to also produce.
You know,
I feel it's so important for us to be able to tell our own stories, and so therefore you have to be in the producing side so you can control the narrative.
So when you were, just say when you were seven, were you acting, were you writing your own?
I think we had an assignment in our English class, and I wrote this little skit.
Uh-huh.
And
how old were you?
I think I was in third grade.
Okay.
So I guess like eight or something like that. And we had to perform it during assembly.
Uh-huh.
And we were coming from the audience up to the stage and people were falling out of their seats laughing. And I was like, wow, I like this, And that was my first thing that I had
your
written.
Your first foray.
Yeah, foray into acting.
Right.
But I really enjoyed, putting stories together and writing. And, when I went to SUNY at Purchase, even though I was in the...
Yeah, but when did you realize that you had a gift? For it or a talent for it?
I think at that time I knew because I also, I was musician wise, I played the upright bass fiddle and I also played the viola.
Mm-hmm.
And
the viola is the small.
Right, the string.
Yeah.
Next to the violin is
right,
the second,
right.
yeah.
It's slightly bigger though.
It's slightly bigger, right. Yeah. So I loved music, played the alto sax. So when I auditioned for, the High School of Music and Art, I auditioned for that.
Mm-hmm.
I got into both, but I said, well, I can always do the music on the side and do the acting.
Mm-hmm.
And it always started there. I remember being in a special program one summer.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was my eighth grade during the summer for, they were doing it at the Brooklyn Museum and they were using the floor where the Egyptian exhibit was. And we did a lot of improvs and we studied the different, statues. And then PBS actually did a documentary about it. And then they invited me to come in to talk and interview them and all things. And I was like, oh yeah, I kind of like this. And then it was applying to high school, of performing arts and the rest was history.
Mm-hmm. So have you ever worked a regular job or did you do the traditional wait tables and all that?
No, I didn't do the wait tables, but, I did a lot of word processing, worked at law firms. I was very fascinated with law.
Uh-huh.
So that was really good and really helpful. So even when, we got our theater loft in Tribeca, reading all of those documents, because I was always studying. I wasn't like a passive person just editing. I was able to use that information and it was able to help me when I had to use it in terms of going to court with the landlord who wasn't doing what he was supposed to do.
Right. So that was your first studio?
Yeah, that was the first theater that we had. Yeah, that was it. That was in 1991.
We have two friends in common. The first one, I cannot remember his name. The second one is Rome Neal.
Yes, Rome Neal, yeah.
Rome's been on the show.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I follow him a lot, and I've been to his the New Rican Theater. Uh-huh. Yeah.
He's doing a play right now at the New Rican Theater, which is written by this older guy. I can see him in my mind's eye. And it's doing really well, and he had a great, huge write-up in the New York Times.
Wow.
I would say a month ago or so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was telling him that I knew you, and he was like, oh, wow.
Small world.
Yeah, small world.
Small world, yeah.
Well, either a small world or I'm a big person.
Let's say both.
So you knew that you wanted to do this, so you did word processing and stuff like that. So you didn't do the typical wait tables.
No, didn't do that, no.
So did you ever go out to California?
I did it one time on a vacation, but I, you know, there was a time when I was going to, you know, do the thing that a lot of actors do, you know, work bi-coastal, go out there for, you know, prime, you know, pilot season.
Right.
But then I had decided to, you know, actually get a physical space for the theater. And that kind of changed everything, because then I had a lease agreement and it was like, okay, that became the priority. And I had to physically be in New York City. So that whole idea of doing that kind of went to the wayside.
So you did do some, you did do acting.
I did a lot of commercials.
Do you even go into any of those soaps, like One Life to Live and General Hospital and all that?
I did something. I remember when Angie, that whole thing with, can't even think who it was. On All My Children, I did, you know, Under Five on there, did something on As the World Turns, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, I did that for a while.
I didn't realize those things are still on.
They're not on anymore.
There's one that's on still.
I think As the World Turns, I think, and General Hospital. I think those are the two longest running soaps. Yeah, you know, they were around, they were there from the beginning.
Forever.
Yeah, they were there from the beginning. And they have a loyal base.
What's taken over from soaps today? Yeah.
I think, well, you know what's been happening? Well, you know, like that whole reality shows, that's been happening a lot today. You know,
Let's have a conversation about that. And how is it impacting the, how is it impacting the theater world, this whole reality stuff? Or is it?
I know I've watched some of the reality shows, because with the Strawberry One Act Festival, we do it as a play competition where the audience actually gets to cast their votes and determine which plays move to the next round and so on.
And you're called, the New York Times calls you?
Yeah, like the American Idol for playwrights. So,
okay,
you know, so I've watched them just for the purpose of seeing what works and hoping that one day we can do the festival as a televised show. I watch Big Brother, you know, because I like that whole idea of using celebrities. I'd love to do the festival where we bring in celebrities to work with, you know, up and coming actors and have them work together. That, you know, almost like a Dancing with the Stars.
Right.
But this would be acting with the stars. You know what I'm saying?
So, all right, we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Who do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo, woo! What's that?
Talking Alternative Radio. 24 hours a day.
And we're back. This is Noreen Sumter on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And tonight I'm speaking with Van Dirk Fischer.
Yes,
from the Rion Theater. let me say this to you, right? Like, if I don't mess up your name or something, we're not having a show.
Right.
You know? Because it seems like that's my hook now.
That's your hook.
You know.
Well, so, then we definitely know it's live, right? Because if it wasn't live, you could edit it.
Exactly, you know. I don't have a freeze frame, and I would say to people that I am not Oprah.
Right.
I'm not Oprah. Okay. I don't have a lighting crew, and I don't have grips and all
that. You keep it real,
TV stuff.
And it's live.
We keep it
Live and raw.
It's live and very raw.
And very exciting.
So you were born in New York City, originally from Crown Heights. You knew that theater was your bag from a very young age.
Right,
you got the bug at seven when you wrote your first skit and people were dying in the audience.
Right.
Your audience.
Right.
Did you ever create plays at home for your parents?
No, but I when I wrote plays, I would use dialogue that I heard from home with my parents.
What kind of dialogue?
I remember my mother coming to see a show, and she was like, man, you didn't have to put that in there. You know, because she would hear
her voice
and stuff. You know, things that she would say to my father, things that she would say to us. And I would just be dying laughing because she would be like, well, why did you have to say that? Well, I was like, well, that's what you said. You know, that's how you get your good dialogue.
Right.
Even when I'm around people, I'm listening. If I'm on the train, I'm listening to dialogue because you hear real conversation. And sometimes people say the darnest things.
Right.
You know, so I always get my material from that.
Absolutely. I mean, I call it hear usling. Mm. I like hear usling on the subway, listening to people's stories. Like I had an experience today, which I actually kind of not regretted, but I thought about how I could have said it differently.
Right.
Because I didn't mean it. So there was this young group of kids on the train. They could have been anywhere between, I'm going to say, 13 and 15, maybe. They could have been younger because sometimes the kids
look
so much older today.
Yeah.
And they were talking about porn. You know, they watched porn at night, right?
Right.
And I was like, oh, God. You know, it's a different era.
Right.
You know, what
they have access to because of the internet.
Right. So they watch porn at night. And she said she's hiding it from her brother and stuff. So, like, I got up off the train to get ready to get off the train. And this girl, literally, she must have been a little bit smaller than me in terms of height.
Right.
She just threw herself across the seat, you know, the three-seater.
Right.
And I said to her, now, you know better than that. You know you're way too big for that.
Right. What was she doing?
Like, she was just throwing herself, you know, like being a kid, just throwing herself across the seat. And like I immediately said to her, you know, you are way too big to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You know better than
that.
Right, right. And so she sat down in the seat because I have a way of speaking that the kids, they get it. Like, oh, sorry, miss, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was
like an adult is watching, like a parent.
And then when I got off the train, I was like, damn, I could have handled that differently because I think I took something from her or I triggered something in the realm of, I said, you're too big for that. I wasn't meaning that she was big or fat. I was just saying that she was too old
for
to be throwing herself across the seat on a crowded subway.
Right,
and
right.
You're
not a kid.
And
doesn't know better.
Yeah. So a face kind of dropped and I was like, damn, if I had it to do it again. So I just want to apologize. I know you're not listening, but I just want to throw it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't mean you were fat or anything like that. I was just saying you are too grown to be throwing yourself around this train like a toddler.
Right.
You know, but yeah, that's kind of like listening to people's conversations.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love hear rustling. I think it's one of my favorite things. So tell me, how did you start the Strawberry Act, Strawberry One Act play
festival? It came out of, you know, really trying to get the audience involved. So it's interesting because I don't think they were doing American Idol back then.
Right.
So I just thought it would be a great way to get the audience involved in helping.
Maybe they stole it from you.
You know, no, I don't think so.
No, that comes out of England, I guess.
Right. But I thought it would be a great way to get the audience involved in helping us pick the best play.
Right.
Because I was looking for a way to find a playwright to give them a development deal. And so this way, by doing the different play, it made it fun for the audience to help them, you know, have them participate in the selection process.
Right.
You know.
So over how long many years have you been doing it now?
We started doing that in 1995. So yeah. And then starting in like 2002, we started doing, you know, the play festival twice a year. So it's like, even though we're going into our 32nd season.
Wow.
We haven't.
So you pretty much, if you're.
But we haven't been around that long, is what I'm saying. Because we were doing we were doing that twice a year.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So the Strawberry Act Theater has been around 37
years. Well, the Strawberry One Act Festival has been around since 1995.
Right.
But I'm thinking the theater has been around since 91. So what does that make us, like 25?
I don't dance me. I don't look good at math. But no matter where the theater, the actors go, it's still the Strawberry Act.
Right.
So it doesn't mean that you were in one location.
Right. That's
just true. Means that you were, you know, roving around, right?
Yeah, I guess I was, I guess I meant how long has the theater company been around?
Right.
Yeah.
But the theater company has been around and it's been since different people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Always, yeah.
So now, with the theater company, how the people that were the original theater company, how have they gone on? What have they gone on to do? Have they become actors? Have they become?
Wow, yeah. They've done a lot. Yeah. You know, there was one point Jesse Eisenberg who did. I'm trying to think. What was it? Social? The thing on
He's
Facebook.
He's touching my knee, people.
I'm sorry. Social Network. Uh-huh. He did a couple of plays with the festival.
Right.
Otto Asando. He was with us. He's I think he's on Chicago PD right now, uh-huh. and he was also in Jason Bourne. Uh-huh. So he's done a lot of work. He's worked with Meryl Streep, you name it. We've had a lot of actors come through and uh-huh. have moved on and done really great work.
Do you keep in contact with them?
I do. Yeah. I do.
And do they come back to the,
They come back. I mean, Otto, one year came back to our award ceremony and mm-hmm. he actually presented awards. So we bring them in for that as well.
Right. I'm
but
sweating.
Yeah.
I'm having a moment, people. Hold on. I'm a woman of a certain age and I'm having a moment.
You're having a moment.
So you had people come back, celebrities who have become celebrities.
Right. Yeah.
Come back.
Yeah.
So tell me about what's some of the acting things that you've been in, like commercials? Because you told me a story about one commercial that they asked you if you were old enough to smoke.
Right. And it's funny because I've always had back then, I always had this baby face.
Right.
And so even though I was old enough, when I saw the actual billboard, it was from Benson and Hedges.
Uh-huh.
And there we are smoking and staying, it was Christmas time. Uh-huh. And the funny thing is I didn't smoke. But for that day to get that job, I was smoking. I was holding that cigarette.
Like a professional.
Yes, you know what I'm saying?
You had the cough.
Anybody who knew me back then, I didn't like smoking at all. But, then it became time, for commercials because, print work pays pretty well, especially if it's advertising prints. I was like, okay, I can do this, and then they actually chose the pictures that I was in. So I was like, okay, this is great.
So do you do more directing now as opposed to more acting, or is it like
more directing now, more directing, more producing, more writing. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I've picked things from the headlines and have written about.
Right.
We had that situation that happened in 94 where there was a police officer, Lavati, in the Bronx mm-hmm. who had... They were the Baez brothers. They were playing touch football mm-hmm. in the Bronx in front of their house on a dead-end mm-hmm. street. And the ball bounced off of the police officer's car. And he put the kid in an illegal chokehold. Mm-hmm. And he ended up dying. And then we did that a couple of years ago. Right around, we opened right after the situation happened with Eric Garner. So mm-hmm. we got a lot of press for that because it was like, that was 20 years ago.
Right.
And here it was still happening.
Right.
We had the Susan Smith story that
What's
happened.
That?
Susan Smith, she had in Union, South Carolina, she was the woman who said that her car had been carjacked by a black man.
And was it the one with the babies?
Right.
But she actually killed her babies.
She actually killed. And the thing is, I wrote like a rock gospel musical about that situation mm-hmm. because the harsh reality is if it hadn't been for them figuring out that there was no flashing red light that she had stopped mm-hmm. at on that particular highway. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have known that she had lied about it. And in Union, South Carolina, they had the death penalty.
Right.
So the man she had accused, an innocent man, could have gone. Did he
get off?
Yes, he did. Yeah. They figured it out. It's interesting. So nowadays you hear a lot of people going on television, they're crying crocodile tears, mm-hmm. For their kids. And then you come to find out they actually killed the kid themselves. Or they killed, their... their parent, wife,
right.
or,
So when you write, what kinds of things do you write? Is it always from facts? Is it always factual?
Mm.
And then when you're writing, are you putting your own two cents in it, or are you doing research and all that?
Doing
kind of
the
stuff?
Research, yeah, doing a lot of research, yeah.
Right.
And putting, and trying to shine light on it in a different way and make it relevant to us today. And sometimes trying to point out the horrors of what could have happened in this particular situation.
Right.
Because a lot of times, if you think about theater and film, I was listening to someone talking about the beauty about television or film is that it allows the viewer to make that eye contact mm-hmm. and to bring them in. And so you're able to touch the person in a different way where you can really affect them to make some kind of change.
Right.
And I think theater does that too. Our whole purpose is to move people's souls.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always a passion in trying to make some kind of effective change.
Right.
You know, so even with the show, when I met Idafe Okpoyo.
Uh-huh. Oh, tell me about that guy. Is this the guy that you said that you met that had come from Africa?
Right.
Yeah, tell me that story.
So I went to...
Tell the viewers that story.
Yeah, I went to an event at Immigration Equality.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went to see a gentleman who was actually going to be dancing.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really know much about the event other than he was dancing. And his performance was going to be at the pier.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, there was going to be an event at a gallery... around, I think it was like in the 26th Street area.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the event, and they had a couple of immigrants who had sought asylum mm-hmm. here and successfully, you know, was able to get it. And they both had written books, and Idafe came from Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And he just read an excerpt from his book, and I was so moved by it, you know, his courage and resilience.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him afterwards, I said, you know, you should try to make this into a play. And he was like, what? And so we did. You know, I said, well, I'll get the book. I'll read it. And then we can get together and talk and meet.
Mm-hmm.
And you can talk to me and tell me some things. And I said, I'll structure it. And we pulled out some...
meaty pieces.
Oh, yes. And so the thing that's really been incredible about it, and he's very humble as a thing, too. I've been learning more and more about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's an advocate for the LGBTQ community mm-hmm. as well as
LGBTQ.
You know, I have to keep looking at it to get it right. But, you know, he's really incredible and very humble.
Uh-huh.
But the one thing that I love about the whole relationship of working on this piece is that he said, you know, Van, I wish you were around when I was writing the book. And I brought him out of his shell. So now when he does his speaking engagements, right. he's able to really
confident.
Draw people in. And also, you know, he's able to act it out and put more of his emotion in it.
Right.
So he's grown a lot, too. And he's always saying, this has happened. And it's really exciting.
So is he going to be in one of your...
Yes. Well, you know, I wrote the play. His play is going to open March 19th.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to do two performances, one at 7:30 and one at 9 that mm-hmm. particular day. And then mm-hmm. on the 24th, he's doing his third performance.
Okay.
So we're really getting the word out. It's one of the major plays that we're doing. We have two plays that are dealing with immigrants.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you like comic books and movies? How about TV and pop culture? Then you've come to the right place. Hi, I'm Michael Dolce, host of Secrets of the Sire. Joined every week by my co-host, Hassan, Lord of the Radio, Godwin. Together, we have over 15 years' experience creating graphic novels, screenplays, and more. Join us as we bring you the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
So we're back. This is Noreen Sumter on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And I'm speaking to Van Dirk Fischer from the Riant Theater.
Yes, yes, yes. You got it right.
And he actually spells theater the British way.
Yes.
So why'd you do that?
I just liked it.
Uh-huh.
You know, I guess it's very unique.
Not for nothing. It's probably the proper way. I don't want to cause a riot, but
right.
I think it is the correct way to spell
it. Yeah, right.
So tell me some more about this guy. So he So he's written this. So what was his story? Tell us a little bit about his story.
He was
persecuted.
Right. He's the first person in his family to go to college, mm-hmm. university. And he's also a gay man, but mm-hmm. you know, looking at him, you wouldn't know that.
You wouldn't know that he was a gay man.
Right, you wouldn't know.
There was kind of like a...
Well, no flashlights. He has no flashlights. Right. But the thing is, you know, and he was also, you know, already like an activist dealing with people who have HIV and all of that. But he told me...
Which country was he from?
Nigeria.
Okay.
But he said that they had passed a law where anybody could persecute and kill a person who... is gay. Uh-huh. And so he had a friend of his who he was, you know, trying to tell him he should go to the clinic because he was sick. You know, he had AIDS. Mm-hmm. And the guy was afraid to go. And when they found out that he was actually gay, they, mm-hmm. you know, they actually killed him in the street.
Yeah.
So he told me a lot of stories, and some of it, you know, is in his book. And He had gone to a party. He had gone to a club to celebrate his birthday, mm-hmm. and it's interesting because as I was reading the book, I was like, "Wow, you know, this is interesting. You know, you know the situation and the danger, but you go to a club, and I guess you're just trying to live your life regardless."
Absolutely.
And they were dancing. You know, you're dancing, you're drinking, you're celebrating. And he had some friends who were saying, "You know, oh, we've got to watch it because they're staring at us and they're looking at us and talking." Because there were no women.
So who's the us?
Other people in the club. It was a straight club,
right?
But he was there with his friends,
right.
And they were dancing, and there were no women among them.
Right.
So obviously they drew attention. And so he said, you know, his friend was saying, you know, we got to leave. They didn't leave until the place closed, which right. I thought was kind of dangerous because mm-hmm. they could be waiting outside. Mm-hmm. But he went home, and that next morning, they were knocking at his door.
People
in the village, in the town, they came and they dragged him out of, knocked the door down, dragged him out of bed, tried to kill him. And the thing is, they thought he was dead. They thought they had killed him mm-hmm. because when he woke up, a nurse was tending to his wounds and she said that he had passed out in the gutter.
Right.
And that's the only saving grace that he had, that he had passed out. So they thought he was dead. So they left him alone. And he immediately fled and came to the United States.
So does he have, what do you call it?
Asylum?
Asylum.
Yeah, he did, yeah. It took like, I think he got it by, he arrived October 16th, 2016, right mm-hmm. before Trump was elected.
It's funny how you say that, because today, while I was walking down on Fifth Avenue, mm-hmm. I found a, I don't know if I have it in here, because this is like the black hole of hell. Mm. But somebody had dropped all these cards in the street. They were seeking asylum from the Ecuadorian embassy. Oh, here it is.
Wow.
It isn't such a black hole after all.
Uh-huh.
But they were seeking, they call it torture and persecution.
Mm.
The DOJ and the FBI are the, you know, so he's writing all this stuff about it. But it's funny that because he's looking to get, I don't know. I mean, when I read it, it sounds like he's a little bit of a psycho. But I don't know. Who am I to know?
Right?
Who am I to judge?
Yeah. You never know people's stories or what frame of mind they're in when they're writing something
and
like that.
I guess if you've been tortured and beaten and all this stuff. And
you got to be traumatized.
Yeah.
See, the interesting thing with him is that I knew that as an actor, if you're working on something, you don't use something that hasn't been resolved in your life.
Right.
And this happened in 2016. And this mm-hmm. is, at the time we started working on it was 2018.
Right.
November. So it's very fresh. And a lot of things he hadn't really dealt with. He just, you know, when you're traumatized, you put it someplace safe so you can go on with your life. Mm-hmm. But I told him I felt that in terms of his mission, mm-hmm. I felt it was important that he go there. You know, something like you sacrificing yourself for the cause. Because mm-hmm. I said he can touch so many people and people need to know this story.
And as he speaks, I'm sure he's healing.
Yeah, and that's the interesting thing. Because he told me like 2 weeks ago, you know, it's like each time we rehearse, he would say something different.
Mm-hmm.
So we're walking on our way to the, you know, to the bus stop, at train station. And he said, Van, I want to thank you so much. He said, because, you know, this has been, you know, like therapy for me because I haven't dealt with a lot of these things and now I'm able to. So it was kind of cathartic.
Right.
You know, so that was, you know, very good for me to hear because, you know, I'm asking him to do all these things, but it's helping him at the same time. And I think people are going to be very moved by it. And I told them, too, I think it's important for people to see this because, just like I said, when you are acting something out, people can identify with you on a different level.
Right.
If they can feel for you, then maybe they can have compassion for you.
And then what you're doing is you're healing them if they have issues that they need to resolve.
Right.
And then you're also, you know, hitting people up who maybe have people in their family that are persecuted or that they have been persecuted. So they might, some compassion and empathy might open up that door.
Right, right. Like he told me, there are people in his lovers, you know, a lot of them are Republican. So I'm
Republican as in Republican American or
Republican American.
Oh, okay.
Right. So they too, I'm sure.
So his boyfriends are Republicans.
I don't know what his boyfriend is. No, but his boyfriend's family.
Uh-huh.
A lot of his family and friends and relatives are Republicans.
Okay, got it.
So I'm sure in some ways, they may be Trump supporters. Right. In other words, so in some ways, I'm sure as they get to know him and have been getting to know mm-hmm. him, and now maybe hopefully, because I know a lot of them are coming to see the play.
Right.
It'll be a different understanding because you can hear about one thing, but mm-hmm. then to actually really hear the person's story and right. see it from their eyes. I said, if you can change one person, you never know how that one person can change a village.
Right. Absolutely. So what is your, I don't even really have to ask this question, but what is the importance of story?
Like I said, to change people in some right. way, to move them, to help them see something different. And it's not always sad things. Right. We deal with light, fun things,
right.
But things that can inspire people to be a better person, or as you say,
there's no
live their best life.
Absolutely. There's no such thing as better. They're not objects.
Right. We all go through something for
right.
a reason.
So I want you to talk about the Story Act, One Act Theater again, because there are people out there that you want to, they have stories to tell, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do you believe that everybody has a story to tell?
Well, everybody does. You know, mm-hmm. it's just a matter of finding the right way to tell the story.
Right.
In this case, I was that vehicle to help put it down and help him to articulate it and write it and shape it and everything in this format.
Right.
We do have the core project where people can work on
new material.
Talk about that. So we have, writers can submit their plays for mm-hmm. the core project. And it can be at any...
Is that a core project?
Yeah, C-O-R-E?
C-O-R-E. Okay.
Where they can be at any stage and mm-hmm. I'll read it. And then, we can get together with, help them in terms of structuring and writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point we'll bring in actors. We'll bring in a director who will actually do a table read so they can hear what it's like. And
mm-hmm.
then we'll do a reading in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for the act, for the playwright to get feedback.
Right.
And also to hear his work so he can see, is this what I intended?
Right.
And
and
if it's ready, then put it on stage for an audience to see. The thing in this case with his play is that he's got he's been able to relax and become the person, the storyteller. It's he's become very good,
mm-hmm.
Very natural,
Well, he's probably relaxed into his story.
Yeah.
Rather than having anxiety and fear about it.
Right, yeah, you can be self-conscious because you're watching and you're wondering what people are going to think, but he's gotten to the point where he's not even thinking about
right.
that. And he's playing all the different characters in this story too. So that's been amazing. He's very shy, very humble. I was right. like, I remember one rehearsal I said, dance. And, I want you to dance here and do your dance. And he was like, oh, I don't dance. I was like, look, please. And then once he broke out and did it, I was like, you know how to dance. You just shy and didn't want to dance.
Right.
And I found that to be the case with a lot of things.
Okay. So let me just, you mentioned something that I always think about with actors because I have my neighbor down the street. His name is Doug E. Doug. He used to be, that
right.
guy. And so I spoke to him one time and he was doing a TV show where he had to play a different character from all the characters that he had played before. Don't ask me what the name of the show
right.
is. But his wife had said to me that, because he's taken on this character, he's embodied this character, he's become this character, and it's actually like living with somebody brand new.
Yeah, that can happen sometimes. Because sometimes actors, when they're really getting into it, they can still keep the remnants of that character with them, even when they're home and the play is over, or at night after rehearsal,
That's a little freaky.
Yeah. I remember one time doing a play and it was dealing with the story of Job from the Bible.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of the actors were, playing out. They were becoming the characters they were playing.
Right.
So you had your Iago type character who was like a snake.
And,
if you think from Othello,
right,
who's
right.
really, like a Judas type person. This particular actor was becoming like that in real life too. I was like, wait a second.
So how do you actually deal with that? Like, because people have to go, like, I think of Jamie Foxx, right? And he played that role of the guy that was in California, the genius, and he lived underneath the subway,
right?
I mean, like, he really embodied that guy.
Yeah, it's like method acting. You know, you really, you know, you try to become that person, you try to identify with them, you try to live their life, and, you know, in safe means, of course, without causing any danger. But, yeah, but that can happen, you know. And you always have to have that safe space so you can pull out of it, because you never know what you might open.
Right.
You know,
inside of your own space.
Right. Like in this case, when you're dealing with the trauma of, you know, like when he had to deal with the scene when he's being beaten up, that's a very painful situation. And he hasn't really thought about that much.
Right.
So when we were going there initially, he didn't want to feel and experience that pain. It took a while to get him to open up and go there.
Right.
You know, but the thing is, if a person hasn't resolved it, they could have a breakdown and then you may not be able to bring them out of it.
Oh, so they might get stuck there?
They can get stuck there, you know, depending on the situation. Because if they hadn't dealt with it, now they're someplace where they can. It might take longer because now they're dealing with something where they can let it out.
Right.
So, and I did tell him that. But, you know, I said, look, I'm here. We'll make it through this.
So would you advise most actors that they have a therapist as well?
Well, most actors... most of them know, and their teachers will tell them, you know, you would use an as if. You would use something that hasn't really happened to you if you haven't resolved it in your real life.
Right.
Because that's unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen. You know, so you always use something that's safe.
Because, yeah, you know, acting is not an easy job.
No.
I mean, it looks really easy, but that's, I guess, how professional.
And you're using, you know, the thing is, even in the as if, you're the more... you are like the character, the more you are the character. So you're using your real emotions and how you would react in that situation. And if you're truthful to yourself, then you'll be real in the situation. Because you know how you would act. If somebody was going to kill you, how would you react? You know, you'd make it real.
I'd be freaked out.
Right. You know,
because I watch some of these shows, and especially the ones where children are involved and they have to participate in, like The Room.
Mm-hmm.
That little boy had to be in that room.
Right.
You know, so that like that took something at that young, tender age.
To be able to do that, yeah, that was
incredible. You know, and I'm not surprised why a lot of child actors, if they don't grow up a little bit unstable and generally top out.
Or, you know, you always have to have that good foundation of somebody to keep you grounded.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in some situations, you know, kids can have a wild imagination and just do things without being self-conscious.
Right. Well, they have less to be self-conscious about, I guess.
Hopefully. You know, as long as you have people who are supportive and let you just be.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like with him, I told him, I said, look, you know, you can do this. You know, one, there were certain characters he had to play. He had no problem. I said, wait a second. You can do this.
What's this here?
So.
Are we almost done? Like, we have one more session? Okay, great.
So, you know, we're actually going to be doing the festival. We're going to.
I think we're
going to
hold that.
Okay, you want to hold that?
Yes. We're going to take a break and we're going to come right back.
Okay.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
And we're back. This is Noreen Sumter on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And I am with Van Dirk Fisher.
Yes.
Where does the Dirk come from?
My parents told me they saw a movie with Van Johnson and Dirk Bogarde. It must have been a double bill because they haven't appeared in any movies together. So they took the name and put it together.
Oh, okay.
That's what they tell me.
And your parents' name, family name is Fisher.
Right, right.
Van Dirk Fisher.
Right.
It's like you've got two first names.
Or a last name.
So like, you're going to go through and tell us all about what you have here on this notes?
Yeah.
Because you have a lot of notes.
He
loves some notes.
I haven't had to use them, but yeah, the festival is going to open March 13th and run through the 24th. Mm-hmm. We have 32 plays that are going to be featured in 12 days. So there are a lot of performances each day. And once we open, there's something happening every single day. Mm-hmm. We have a musical that's being done called Opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it's actually Stanley Martin, who's in Aladdin on Broadway.
Okay.
This is his first musical that he's doing, and so we're happy to have him in it as well.
Nice.
We're going to be performing at Theater 54 at Shetler Studios, which is located at 244 West 54th Street.
Okay.
And we're very happy about that. And people can get tickets.
Mm-hmm. Where can they get tickets?
Yeah, they can either call the box office at 646-623-3488. That's 646-623-3488.
Uh-huh.
Or they can go to our website, which is www.theriant.theater. That's TheriantTheatre. And then theater, Theatre
Right,
.com.
Not theater.
Right. We're going to go with the British way.
That's the British way.
Yes,
theater.
The British.
Theater.
Yes. The chitty.
Okay. And so, go ahead.
The other thing that we're doing that's really exciting is we're having at our launch party, we're going to be honoring, giving out the Pioneer of the Arts Award.
The what?
The Pioneer of the Arts Award. So we're going to be honoring Camille A. Brown, who is a choreographer. She did Jesus Christ Superstar Live with John Legend on NBC.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Love John Legend.
She did Once on This Island, which the revival won a Tony on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And right now she has Choir Boy, which is doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also honoring Jerome Preston Bates.
Mm-hmm.
He was just in American Son, and he was in Jitney. That was a great revival, too, mm-hmm. on Broadway. And so we're going to be honoring them. We're going to have the Video Diaries Project, which are going to be little short films about the artists in the festival, so you find out what inspired them to write their plays.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have food, we're going to have drinks, we're going to have some entertainment. I have Boncella Lewis is going to be singing, and she's bringing her pianist. And we're going to eat and have a good time.
Okay.
And that's going to be on March 4th.
And give the website again.
It's www.theriantheatre.com.
.com. Don't let me miss out. I'll mess it up. So is there anything that you would like to leave people with? Or let me ask you this. Is there any questions that you would like me to ask you that you would ask me and I can ask you back? I like that. I haven't done that in a minute. It's a bit of a tongue tie.
I think people should come out, check out the shows. You know, in any particular night, you can see four plays with the short plays, and you can vote. And, you know, really, you can check out a lot of different plays during that short time. The main thing that I love about the festival is we get people, playwrights from all over the country.
Right.
You know, we've gotten people from Denmark. We've got people from Canada.
You have this lovely, nice fly here. Where is it?
Yeah.
Put it in the black hole.
Here you go. Here's one. You can use mine. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
So it's going to be really, we're just really excited about it. We've brought together so many people.
What is this Fragile Explosion, Nina Simone?
Right. Oh my God. So this guy, Michael, he's written a play that's really, you know, about Nina Simone's life and her music. And so it's like a cabaret show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be performed in the festival as well. So we have so much
You have
going
a lot
on.
Going on. There's a
like
lot.
Like I said, 32
And who is
plays.
This lady, Camille Brown? A prolific black film.
That's what I just told you.
The one that you told me about.
Right, that we're going to be honoring
And Jerome
her.
Preston.
Mm-hmm, that's the guy I told you we're honoring too at the Pioneer of the Arts Award.
Mm-hmm. You've got the Young Sherlock Holmes Adventure.
Yes.
That's, the Caper at Christmas.
Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of good
and
things
you've got Elvira, the immigration play based on the story of Elvira Arlano.
Another thing, this is, you know, March is Women's History Month.
Okay.
And so we're going to be featuring 11 women playwrights, and they all have a powerful voice. Whether it's comedy, they're talking about sexuality, they're talking about identity, they're talking about empowerment, sexual abuse. It's really going to be exciting.
They say one, don't get me wrong. I'm known to mess up my statistics, but is that one in five women are sexually abused?
I think they say that. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
So if there's like 10 women in the room, two of them have been molested.
And the thing is, you know, just only recently have women had the courage, you know, with the Me Too movement to come out and speak on it. And just knowing that they are going to have the support and be believed. So that's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, because I was watching a show, it was a movie the other day, and this woman got molested. And instead of like, you know, supporting her, like, oh, that dirty slut. She's a dirty slut. If she didn't encourage him.
Well, there's something recently where a judge is blaming the 13 and 14-year-old girls saying that they were the sexual aggressors in a situation dealing with this older man. And it's like, that's ludicrous. You know, how are you going to put it on them when they're children?
Right.
You know, so I'm hoping, you know, that
maybe you'll write a play about it.
Bring about a change. Yeah, you never know. You never know.
So I want you to give the information again so that people can actually get it in their heads.
Okay. It's the Rion Theater Strawberry One Act Festival. We're going to be running from March 13th through the 24th, and we're going to be at Theater 54, which is located at Shetler Studios at 244 West 54th Street on the 12th floor, right there between Broadway and 8th Avenue.
And if people want to reach you,
They can call our number, which is also our box office.
But if they wanted to reach you about putting plays together,
they can, you know, email me information at rionttheater at gmail.com.
Cool.
Yeah.
Riant
is RIANT and then theater, theatre.com.
Right.
But for the it's theater, rionttheater at gmail.com, right?
Rion Theater.
Yeah, you can reach us there.
Rionttheater@gmail.com.
And you know, right now people are already submitting for the next festival, so this is a good time for them to
reach
out.
So you do two a year.
The next one will be in the fall.
So the next one will be, what month is that?
Like September, October.
Right. And didn't you have a cruise just recently, or you're going on the cruise?
We're going to do it. We decided to put it off into the following year. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Too much too soon.
Okay. So
it's supposed to be happening right now, to tell you the truth.
Really?
And I was like, wait a second. I think we need to do this next year. It would have been too much with the festival opening in March.
So maybe you need support.
Yes, we do.
And how come? Do you do volunteers? Or, you know,
we have people who can support us and work as interns during the festival, whether they're ushering, whether they're working backstage. Mm-hmm. All of that. So they can contact us about that too.
And so if somebody has a teen that is in the theater, could they volunteer? And
like, yeah, they can volunteer. And if somebody's interested in working as a literary intern, if they have great writing skills, they can write articles about the plays that are going to be in the festival. There are a lot of things people can do.
What about donations?
Donations, of course. You know, nonprofit organizations can't survive without donations.
Right.
So yeah, we ask people, because we also give out the Youth Empowerment Scholarships, which we give to one of the most outstanding interns who work with us. You know, it runs anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000. So the more we collect, the more we have to give.
Right.
They can also go to our website for that, which is therionttheater.com.
Right.
And they can give under the Youth Empowerment Awards.
Cool.
Anywhere from $5 and up. There's no limit.
Yeah, but you like the big dollars.
Yes,
like the big money.
$1,000.
We take the big money.
Yes, yes, yes.
So,
and people can also earmark, you know, giving a scholarship where they can underwrite it and they can name it after their business or a person they love.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways people can give.
Okay. So I just want to thank you for taking the time out to come on my show and share your activities. I've known each other. We've known each other now.
Over 2 years. April.
2 years now, right? Yeah, time goes so fast.
Who are you telling?
It goes really fast.
And you're just a terrific, wonderful person.
Oh, thank you.
You're very supportive. No, you are. You are. And I love what you do and how you've inspired people to live their best life. I think that's wonderful. And I can see the joy that you get from helping people.
I do. I really enjoy it.
I mean, so this is all real.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes a difference because you really impact people's lives.
Thank you.
And you're impacting mine. You know, you're an inspiration.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
No, but it's heartfelt. Yeah, you know, I can't stop talking about you. I mean, I was at an event last night. I was telling people, oh, you've got to check out our group.
Right.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah, because Van is a member of my BRG, which is the BRG, which is a part of the Manhattan Chamber of Commerce, BRG, Business Referral Group. And we meet every 2 weeks and we talk about business. And like, you've seen yourself grow, right?
Right.
You've
seen your business grow. Yeah.
You've seen like being, you know, responsible, taking on more stuff, like expand it in different ways, allowing your creativity to fly.
Right. Also, I put together my first PowerPoint for the theater.
Right.
As a result of having to make that first presentation to the group, you know, so that was like really great.
And your presentation was great, by the way.
Thank you. It was really, really, and it got a lot of hits.
And
made a lot of good friends in the group.
Absolutely.
Got a lot of good referrals.
Absolutely. So, you know, he's not only like a member of the theater and, you know, really contributes to making a difference in that world, because that's how you make a difference.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we all have our way of making a difference. And so this is how you do it, through the theater, helping people to really expand their lives and really get their stories told.
Right.
So on that note, I just want to thank you for coming
on
the show.
Thank you for
having me. And I will see you tomorrow.
Right. Yes. Bright and early.
At noon, right?
At noon, right?
Yes, it's not that bright.
That'll be early, because who knows what time we get to sleep tonight.
Absolutely. No, please, God, let me get home by at least 10:30. So this is Noreen Sumter signing off from Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And you can reach me on Noreen Sumter at noreensumtercoach.com if you want to find out more about the show, or if you want to find out about working with me and having services. Talk to you soon, and I'll see you all next week. Bye!
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Do you like comic books and movies? How about TV and pop culture? Then you've come to the right place. Hi, I'm Michael Dolce, host of Secrets of the Sire. Joined every week by my co-host, Hassan, Lord of the Radio Godwin. Together, we have over 15 years' experience creating graphic novels, screenplays, and more. Join us as we bring you the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, talkradio.nyc.
The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us, right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.